just turned 23 and I headlined the O2 Arena on Sky Sports. Like, that's crazy. I remember walking out to that fight and all I'm seeing is phone lights everywhere. And I'm just this young boy from Brixton. Like, I'm not supposed to be here.
Isaac Chamberlain!
There was not even an inch in me that thought, oh no, this is hard. I thought, I'm going to get him. I hit him with a left hook or something and he was in the clinch and I put my elbow in his neck by accident. And he went, ah, young me. I go, oh, sorry. I was out of my days. I felt like I never had a choice of saying, no, I'm tired or whatever. And that's why now I'm like, if I feel tired, I'm the man of my own ship.
How does that religion go hand in hand with boxing? Boxing is fighting, is hurting, is violent. Yeah. And then with one breath, you're praying and like peace and love and forgiveness, and the other breath you're trying to cave someone's head in.
It's not like I'm bullying someone, it's a choice. They're choosing to get in and we're literally fighting for our families basically to earn some money. I never want to be in a position where I'm taking what I'm doing for granted, like, oh, I'm not waking up to run, or I'm not training, or I'm just going to take it easy. No, because I know what it's like to not fight, and that shit was killing me.
Isaac, welcome.
What's up, man?
I was training. You just finished training, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I was up since 4:50 this morning.
Just wow.
Training. Yeah.
What have you done then, training-wise, today? Talk me through that.
Woke up in the morning, 4:50. I've been using this mouth tape for my breathing, to sleep, to like have more recovery. It's been working, you know, I'm not going to lie.
Really?
Yeah. It's been working, like... It's like I'm trying to find different ways to like elevate my performance and rest and training as an athlete. And I feel like it's helping so far. Do you know what I mean?
The mouth tape thing is, there's so much study on it at the moment. Everyone's talking about a nose breathing.
Yeah.
I actually had an operation on the 10th of Jan on my nose. Because I've had a deviated septum from when I was little. Basically, if I go like that, I can breathe. If I let it go, one side's completely blocked.
Oh,
so for years, I've been mouth breathing, not knowing that like nose breathing is going to be healthier. It's better for the sports and stuff. So finally, after years, I went on January 10th. They basically like recut my septum, realigned it, stitched it. All internal, so nothing external. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to see it. But like now, I can breathe through my nose.
Bloody,
until now, I'm 35. Because Billy always used to say to me, tape your mouth when you sleep. And I'd be like, I'll drown, bro. I can't breathe out my nose.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? I saw him do it one time and I thought, I'm going to copy him. So thank you, Chris.
He's mad into all that.
Yeah.
Like this Whoop I wear.
I
got it from him. Yeah. I've been wearing a Garmin for years, and 3 years ago he was like, mate, you're wearing the wrong thing. This is the one.
Mm.
And ever since then,
track
I'm hooked
sleep,
on it.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah. He's quite in tune with all that.
Yeah, like, he's a proper. That's why, with Chris, he's a world champion. He's willing to do what no one else will. Like he looks like the type of guy, he don't cut no corners.
Yeah, he's a grafter. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And if I was to fight anyone else in the fight with me and him, I would have won. But he's that guy that would just do everything right so you can't slip up. Do you know what I mean? So.
And the grit's there as well with him.
Which you
don't expect, right? Because he's known as a gentleman, he's a really nice guy, talks kindly.
I mean, I expected it when I fought him, But obviously... you don't really know properly until you're in there, because that's like my first 12 rounder and one entrance to my first 12 rounder in a fight like that, bro. You know what I mean?
Atmosphere, everything, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, sorry, what was I saying? What I do, wake up in the morning, 4:50, then I get ready for my first training session, which is strength and conditioning at 5:30 with my guy Rory.
Okay.
And deadlifts and... sandbag carries and, general strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
Then I go for a run straight after because I live 10 minutes from, I live like Putney, Chelsea side. So I live like 10 minutes from the gym and go running. Then after my run, stretch, maybe ice bath. I didn't ice bath today though.
Bottle it.
Yeah. Wait. And then rest. Have a protein shake, rest, and then go to the gym. No, rest, and then obviously I shower. I'm not going to go into bed or sting it. And then just rest, wake up again, take my supplements, breakfast, go to the gym.
Boxing then,
yeah? Yeah, boxing.
Hard work?
Yeah, everything really, bag work, bags, shadow boxing.
And is that how many days a week you do that kind of training?
5 days a week.
Wow.
Obviously, SNC will be probably twice or three times, but boxing 5 days a week.
Quite heavy. And is that off camp as well, isn't it, really? You're not even in camp at the moment, are you?
No, yeah, but, well...
Or like ticking along?
Ticking along, yeah, ticking over, just waiting to, you know, the next big thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll see you at the show Saturday as well.
Yeah.
Was that good?
Yeah, yeah. Boatsy and Aziz, they done their thing, man.
What, did that go how you expected it, that main event? Out of interest. How did you expect that to go?
I don't know. Do you know what was really annoying? Just the slipping on the canvas and stuff, the sweat on the canvas, and they're counting the knockdowns. They should have done that like that. It was a good fight, though.
Yeah.
You know,
I watched it at home on TV and when you go on Twitter just to see what everyone's saying. I noticed about the knockdowns, everyone was giving it a bit of shit.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have been counted. Well,
you know, Boatsy's body shots were very good, played a factor. You know, Aziz, you know, I don't know, because he came in 2 pounds lighter, I think he messed the weight up a bit, the weight cut a bit, because that can pay dividends, you know. So,
of course.
Yeah, I think, that sort of thing happened, but it was a good fight, good fight.
I see that little clip of you trying to hassle Ben into your next fight. What are you saying? What are you trying to plan next?
27th
April, isn't it?
Yeah, 27th of April. That's what Ed Robinson told me. He was like, listen, Isaac, the date is here for you, Wembley, 27th of April. And obviously, you know, Vidal's been talking. He wants me. He wants Chamberlain. And I said, okay, you know, you've poked the bear a lot now.
Mm.
You know, all right, fuck it. Can I swear?
Yeah, of course, bro. Nothing on back, swear.
27th of April. Let's do it. Do you know what I mean? Well, now he's trying to say, oh, let's do March the 31st. I said, wait, what are you talking about? Didn't you want 27th of April? Isn't that when you, like, I mean, not didn't you want it, but didn't you want me to fight me for the belts on our own main event, 27th of April? You don't need to do it on Woodley and Clark's undercard.
Why do you think he wants to do it on the undercard? More time to train?
Personally.
On his less time to train?
Personally, I think he's bluffing. Because when I saw him, looking kind of puffy. I'm not gonna lie. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm not gonna lie. And he was sweating. I saw him sweating in the crowd talking. Boy. So I don't know. Like, are you in the gym? Are you sure? Are you trying to call my bluff? Like me, I can get ready in 8 weeks. What can he get ready in 8 weeks? Do you know what I mean?
When was his last
the biggest
fight
of his life? I don't remember. He fought in, no, I think maybe September or something, October either. Or something like that. He fought Nathan Corliss.
Yeah.
You know, great matchmaking though. 13 fights, 0 knockouts.
So how do you see that fight going, bro?
Bro, I'm going to win, man. My experience will play its part. Do you know what I mean? He's very crafty.
Will it go the distance?
Depends, man, when I touch that chin or them touch them body shots. Like, it depends, innit? Like, you've never seen him tested, so I can't really say.
Of course.
Like, you can only, you know, I've never really seen him in a tough little affair. Like, you know.
Mad. Well, Ben's in after you, as we said. So
I know.
We'll give him a bit of shit when you... He'll think he's been set up when he walks
in. I know.
bro, let's take it back a little bit with the show. I always like to understand where someone's come from because it makes a big difference of who they are today, right?
Mm.
And it'll probably explain a lot about you, the childhood. So talk to me a little about the childhood, the early years.
Right.
Where did you grow up? What was that like?
So you want everything.
Everything,
absolutely,
bro.
Everything.
Give it to me.
All right.
Whatever you're comfortable talking about.
Yeah, of course. Listen, I grew up in Brixton, South London. You know, I was a shy kid, you know, low self-esteem a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum took me to the gym because when I was growing up, there was a lot of gang violence around Loughborough Junction, Angeltown area. That's where I'm from.
I remember.
And, you know, my cousin, he got stabbed in the heart after passing his GCSEs.
Fuck.
Obviously, he was involved in gangs as well, you know. And my mum didn't want me to go down that route because eventually you start to become a product of your environment. And I just, you know, and she saw I was starting to, you know, misbehave a lot and be out and whatever. And, you know, my mum brought me to the gym saying, please do something with this boy. I can't control him. Like, I don't know what to do. And when I went in the gym, I was like, bro, what is this place? Like, people are hitting each other, not getting in trouble. You know, the sweaty gym walls and the smelly bags, the smelly gloves. I said, this place is insane. Like, but I loved it, you know. Like, and the thing that separated me from everyone else was I just loved it. So I was so consistent with it. You know, I just kept going. I saw guys that were way better than me. They came, they left, they got distracted, girls, all of that. And me, I was just a little ugly black boy, skinny. No one really, like, do you know what I mean? He's going to look at me, like, do you know what I mean? So yeah. I just loved boxing. And I feel like the type of personality I had, yeah, or that I probably still have, like, I'm obsessed. When I'm focused on one thing, that's all I'm with. Do you know what I mean? Nothing else matters. And obviously, you know, I started boxing a lot and I was going there every day and around the area, everyone was like, oh, that's the boxer. Yeah, yeah. Good. And I would walk home with my hand wraps, like, so excited to box and stuff. I mean, you know, we never really had much there. Like, I would sweep the gym after training because obviously I couldn't pay the £1 subs at the time. Mm-hmm. And what I used to do is I would leave when they're doing the sit-ups and stuff just a bit early so I don't have to pay. But I'll come just after they take the money and then I'll go in and then I'll do my training and then leave just before. And when they ask me, like, oh, yeah, you need to pay, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I'll pay after training. But I never used to pay after training. So I used to get away with that for a bit. And then I was like, oh, I was asking for like a job because I didn't really want to sell drugs and stuff. Like, so I asked for a little. So I just used to sweep the gym, wipe the mirror. This is Miguel's boxing gym.
By the way.
We used to sweep the gym and all of that and wipe the mirrors and all of that. And they'll give me £5 and I'll take it and I'll go to the shop, buy like, you know, sardines and some bread and something, thinking I'm doing a boxer's diet and watching Rocky and
athlete,
all that.
Yeah.
Wait, and then if I had some leftover money, I'd buy a Kit Kat for the school tomorrow, you know, and then literally repeat my day like that. And I would do that for so long. And yeah, man, crazy.
Mad. So how old were you when you get to the boxing gym, when your mum took you to the boxing gym?
I was 11 and a half, maybe 12. Around that age.
Okay, and was the age when what happened to your cousin?
Yeah.
So you start boxing, you go back to school. Are you more confident now after your boxing? You know, you said you're quite shy.
Yeah, like. I don't know. Not really. I don't know. It's a funny one. Like, it's such a blur now because it's so far away. But I feel like, I don't know.
Nah.
But it was growing, though. It wasn't, like, straight away. It wasn't, like, an overnight thing. Like, it was growing slowly, though, the more I started to win stuff. And I'm a bit good at this, you know?
Do you know what I mean?
Like, so, obviously, you start to focus more. You know, you want to put more in. And I remember I got kicked out of school from Lillian. I was going to Lillian Bayliss Technology School in Kennington. And, obviously, I got kicked out.
What, for being in trouble? Fighting?
I'd done armed robbery.
Did you? At the school?
No, basically.
What happened there?
Obviously, I was still in a little bit, do you know what I mean?
And with the boys?
Yeah. And
older lads, yeah?
Yeah, and obviously there was like a cash box, you know, them cash people, cash box and whatever. And obviously,
like a Securicore van.
Yeah. Sick. Tried to nick one of them, bro.
You've been watching too much Hollywood,
I know. I'm flipping mental. That's the thing about me. When I was young, I would think whatever I can do in my mind, I can make it happen for real.
Yeah, yeah.
And this flipping crazy 14, 15-year-old probably at the time took it and tried to get away with it, but I done it
you
in
took
my school.
It off the guy and
yeah,
ran?
Yeah, but obviously dropped it after, ran off, but I done it in my school uniform. They clocked the school uniform, went to my school, nicked me, and that was it, bro. So, bro, maybe I needed to do that because obviously I got kicked out of school.
Did you get any jail time for that now?
No, thank God.
Yeah, you're lucky.
You know, yeah, I'm very lucky.
That could have put you on a different path.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it was my first defence. My first offence, you know, and obviously I think they felt sorry for me because I think I was doing army cadets at the time as well.
Okay.
See, it's all coming back now. I was doing army cadets at the time and obviously the lawyer was like, oh yeah, you know, he wants to serve, you know, in majesty, this, that, 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 and obviously.
Good angle.
You know, good angle still.
You're
obviously
right,
they put
lawyer.
Me on a, yeah, they put me on tag, which is obviously I had to be curfew and to be in by 7 o'clock. But obviously when I had army cadets, it was like 7 till 9 or something. So Monday and Wednesday and Friday, it was till 10 o'clock, I think. And I had to always like report in, hey, my name is Isaac, whatever. And yeah, man. So I wasn't really that confident, but it started to grow slowly.
Yeah, I mean, you grew up in Brixton, bro. We've got talked to about 11, 12 years old, but obviously from that, I know from myself, from that age to like 18, 20 is when we go a bit off track as guys, right? Our testosterone kicks in, we become teenagers, we're trying to be the big boy around town. Did you get caught up in anything in that period of your life?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, bro. Yeah, bro. Hey, this is going to be a mad podcast.
Go on.
I mean, you know, some of it is a blur, but the things that I can remember, like, you know, obviously you'll get into fights. You'll get into fights with people from other areas and, you know, like, one of these guys that tried to take out a knife and slash me, like, because obviously they were asking me, like, oh, well, where are you from? All of these things. And obviously, when you're, I was like, who are you talking to? What? All of that stuff, innit? Testosterone and that. And you're just thinking, what? And then obviously, you got
is this like a postcode thing?
Probably.
Or
was.
More product thing?
I think maybe postcode.
Both. Okay.
Yeah. Bit of both, you know. And, but when you're at that age, you don't really think about the repercussions and the consequences of your actions, you know. Some of us rolling around with knives and stuff. And then I remember, you know, one time I was, when I was in year seven, that what really got me into kind of that road. When I was in year seven, I got this guy from Brixton. I remember his face. He was like, oh, he got the time. And I saw it on my phone, brand new phone, you know, saved, my mom got it for me. It was a crap little whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Brand new though. And I was like, really excited. I got it playing Snake on it all day. Like, do you know what I mean? And then obviously he took it and I was like, right, well, like, you're going to give it back. And he was like, move, man. And he started going like this, had his hand in his trousers, like he got something on him. And obviously I was like in shock. You know, when the things that happen to you, you're in so much shock. You're like, what the heck? Like, this is mad. Like, and obviously he just walked off and he was like, if you come here again, I'm going to stab you up. And I was like, oh. Like, and obviously that affected me a lot. Do you know what I mean? And obviously when you start, when I saw him like 3-4 years later or something at a bus stop, and obviously I had something on me as well. And when I saw him, yeah, I kind of saw red and he started running. And obviously I ran after him. You know, ran off then, ran around the corner. It was like near, you know, the O2 Academy near Brixton.
I know.
Running and then run into the blocks on the left past the Nando's and stuff, running. Obviously, he got away from me and I'm very, very thankful that he got away from me because I probably would have been serving life.
Yeah.
Because I just lost my head. That's one of the only times probably that I've lost my head and it's like when I see, because like, obviously all the emotions came back, like, you know, this guy, like, you know, took something from me and I was really upset, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just kind of glad that, you know, God makes things work out for you, man, all the time, you know.
Would you say that was the closest thing to a different path for you?
Yeah, and incident? Obviously, you know, obviously there was one part that when I... obviously, he was wanted to make some money because obviously I couldn't survive for £5. And obviously, I remember I would hear my mum say that, you know, she's struggling with money, da 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 da, and all of these things. And, you know, so obviously, one of the guys around the area, right, you know, I need to make some peas, man, whatever, whatever. And we went to go pick up some stuff from a friend's house, not friend's house, but I don't know, some guy, I just don't know. Like far on the bus, and then we got the stuff. We drove. We was on the bus back. Obviously, put it in trousers.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we got off the bus, we got off like near Cowley Estate, like Mitesfield. And obviously, they were doing stop and searches there. And I saw them, and I was like, I froze. I was like, this is mad. Like I was shaking. Like oh my days. Like and obviously, they were like. They saw us and obviously they were going to come over to us. And then he was like, I'll just go this way. I just bolted. I was gone. And I was running like with fear, you know, because if they found me, I best believe, you know. And then obviously I went through, you know, right, left, right through the estates and stuff. And, We went around to my friend's house, dropped him the stuff, then I ran home. Like, I was scared. I just ran home. But I took the real long way, not anywhere near where they were. I just took the long-ass way home. And when I went in, took a shower straight away, it was all running down my leg. Like, and I was like, that, and then obviously I just thought, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore. So I took my phone, I just cracked my SIM, and I said, yeah, forget this, man. This is not the life for me, man.
Yeah, you
know, it's not the life for me.
Lucky that. Lucky. Did your mate get away?
Yeah. Everyone got it. Like, he was messaging me like, yo, what are you doing tomorrow? You know, let's link up, whatever. But I was just like, I just ignored everything, man.
How old were you there, bro?
I think I was 15, 16.
It's amazing at 15, 16, you feel like you have to look out for mumsy. Do you know what I mean? It's quite a young age, isn't it?
Yeah, because I just thought, well, where could I go? What could I do? Like, you know, to help what I mean? Mom. You can't really do anything. Like, and obviously, that's what I kind of felt. I kind of felt like, oh, shit, like,
any brothers or sisters, bro?
Yeah, I got six.
Six?
Yeah. I got four brothers and two sisters.
All younger than you?
Yeah, and I'm the oldest. So imagine that.
Fuck.
So I had to always, like, from
and
early.
And mum on her own? No dad?
Mum was my stepdad. I'm the only one with...
I'm with you, okay.
Yeah. So,
what was that relationship like with stepdad?
Yeah, it was obviously it's better now, but obviously sometimes it's a bit rocky, like it's a bit weird, like. But you start to grow and, you know, appreciate them for what they've done. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, it's a
mad,
it's crazy world, man. Like, it was just crazy, man. You just think there was kind of a pressure on you, but you didn't know what the pressure was, so you don't know what to do. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was a funny one, man.
Do you think, like, obviously you're talking about 15 years ago, right? How old are you now?
29,
yeah. So we're talking like 15 years ago, and you're talking about knives then. But obviously, like, at the moment, there's so much talk around knife crime, isn't there?
Yeah.
So much. Not just in the city, even down in Bournemouth where I live. It's like in everyone's mouths, everyone's afraid of, everyone's talking about it's knife crime. Do you think it's getting worse, or do you just think we're hearing about it more?
It's a bit of both, but I think it is getting worse because I think there's social media and, like, you can publicly embarrass someone and, you know, like, you beat someone up and you record it and then it's all over the internet and then they want to, you know, retaliate in a worse way. And I think that's what's making things worse. And there's no youth clubs anymore. All the youth clubs are shut down, so nobody really knows anyone like that anymore. So obviously when I was growing up, obviously the youth clubs, everyone kind of knew everyone. Do you know what I mean?
I was chatting about this the other day with someone. Youth clubs were so important in the community. Yeah, I remember going there. I made, like, my first friends were made there. Yeah. I learned to play sports there. I learned to, like, mess about with DJ, play pool.
Mm.
It was like a little hangout, wasn't it, on a weekend?
Yeah, but, you know, now they're just shutting everything down, so everyone's a bit more hostile towards each other. Like,
so I've never thought of the social media thing. That's quite interesting. Mm. I suppose you can really hurt someone's ego now by embarrassing them online. Whereas before, you only embarrassed them in the area they were.
Or you heard about something, or, oh, I heard, that's it.
But you didn't know if it was true.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Yeah, bro.
That's mad. So at what point do you change from that kid that wants to help mum and, like, up to no good, to then going, right, I'm going to knuckle down into boxing? Was there anything in between that you thought you might do, or was it always boxing?
No, it was always boxing.
So at what point are you then turning? At what age do you go, fuck this, I'm leaving this life behind, I'm going to help mum, but probably, by boxing?
Probably 15, 16, because obviously I was boxing at the Lynn Boxing Club as well. You know, I went from Miguel's to the Lynn Boxing Club.
Yeah.
Obviously I was, you know, they got me fights and stuff. And yeah, it's crazy, man, you know. How can I explain? Yeah, I was just focused a bit more on boxing after that whole situation and stuff. I just thought, yeah, this is not me, man. Like,
Why boxing out of everything? I know your mum took you there first, but did you find it was helping you get out anger or something? You know, like,
no, because I was never angry. I was never an angry person. Like, I just loved it.
Because for a quiet lad, it's not violent, but it's obviously fighting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It takes quite a lot of courage to hitting the pad is one thing, but sparring and fighting and...
You know what I mean? I don't know. I just loved it, man. You know, and was I violent? I don't know if I was violent, but I probably was. Probably was violent, man, you know? It's just a funny one, man. I don't know. It's just, sometimes it's just there. It was just something in my mind where I was just, like, always doing it, you know, always wanting to do it. And something in me that would, like, never quit, never, you know, I had that in me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mad. What's something I want to touch on, bro? I noticed with you, there's a lot about God. you talk about God a lot. All your posts, all your interviews, all your kind of, and I've only recently noticed it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He's probably always been there, but as I've been looking into you a bit more, learning a bit more, where did that come from? That love for God, has that always been there? Or is it later in life?
No, it's always been there, but I feel like I built my relationship a bit more, a lot more, with, you know, obviously there's times, even in boxing, like, you know, it's, boxing, I went through so much at such a young age in boxing. My first fight, I started sparring, like when I turned pro, I started sparring Deontay Wilder. Like imagine, you go from 5 pounds in the gym to getting paid like $2,000 or whatever, sparring Deontay Wilder, going away and making your debut on Sky Sports and Matchroom, and it's just like, yo, this is mad, like all of this, and you get fame instantly. I was on Ringside when Ringside was still about, and that, and obviously I think I was 19 or 20, like I think I just turned 20 them times, so obviously everything is new to me, do you know what I mean? And I got sponsorship by MGM, and
sick,
yeah, it was just like, wow, what, you know, amazing, like it was all crazy. So it was all new, it was all fresh, but it was just like, okay, you know, I can do something here. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I always give that to God, because there's so many people that are wishing to be on TV and doing the small hall circuit and trying and not getting the opportunities, but God's always blessed me, you know. And obviously, you know, I think he's given me something, some sort of spirit inside me that is like, never say die. Like, even when I thought Wadi Camacho popped my shoulder up and then I pull it back in, still won the fight, everyone thought I was going to lose. I think I had like 4 fights at that time. You know, even before that, I fought a guy, Russ Henshaw, 7 wins, no losses, 4 knockouts or something. He was smashing up everyone up north. It was like basically a 50-50. They put me in there, knocked him out in the 6th round. Like, all of these things, I never really had any easy touches as a... to start off, because obviously they just signed me like whatever. I never had an amateur career. I had 9 amateur fights. Like, you know, I should have had a lot more, but just it happens, isn't it? Maybe it was something that was God was trying to teach me. But you know, then obviously after the Wadi Camacho fight, I won my first belt, everyone's starting to realize, right, you know what, this guy, yeah. Then obviously the Lawrence Okoli fight happens, and the build up to that, and then obviously, because it didn't go my way, a lot of things started to unfold. You know, I was overtrained. Found out my uncle stole money from me and all of these things. And I thought people that were going to be there for me wasn't. And obviously, that's like really broke me. And who could I turn to? I couldn't turn to anyone. So it's like I turned to God. Do you know what I mean? And I was kind of wondering, like, why is all these things happening to me? You know, but you don't realize the position that you're in. Because now I look back at it, like, I'm 23 years old and just turned 23 and I headlined the O2 Arena on Sky Sports. Like, that's crazy. Do you know what I mean? But you don't realize it. You're just a young kid. Like, I remember walking out to that fight and all I'm seeing is phone lights everywhere. And I'm just this young boy from Brixton. Like, am I supposed to be here? Like, but, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I was actually going to ask you here about your debut in 2015. Like, what was that feeling like growing up in London and then finding yourself stepping out of the O2 Arena? Must have been mad.
Mad. Yeah, it was just like, I had a massive smile on my face as well. Like, wow, this is what it is like.
But as you say, you don't really take things in at the time, do you?
Nah, because it's so fast. It happens so quickly. And it's just like, whoa. And I remember how innocent I was, yeah. I remember... when I'm fighting, I'm actually boxing this guy called Moses Motovu, you know, strong, very experienced journeyman. And obviously I remember I hit him with a left hook or something and he was in the clinch and I put my elbow in his neck by accident and he went, ah! And then, do you know what I say? Young me, I go, oh, sorry. I was like, oh my days.
So polite.
Yeah, but obviously now...
Yeah.
But obviously before I'm just like, oh, I was like that, innit? Like...
Still in sport mode, aren't you then?
Yeah.
Rather than like kill or be killed kind of.
You know, and I feel like, you know, God has played a massive part, especially after the Okoli fight, because of obviously the things that happened and getting back. And obviously I fought Luke Watkins, you know, after that fight, he was obviously former Commonwealth champion and stuff, got the win. But it was a funny one because I definitely coasted that fight. And then the ref tried to give him me winning by 1 point because I knocked him down in the last round. Imagine I didn't knock him down in the last round. What the heck?
Yeah, you mad, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean...
And was growing up, was mum and like siblings and that, was it all religious growing up or not?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's been in you from young
then? Yeah, it's
been in me
from young. Yeah. So, you know...
I always find it, the reason I ask, I always find it interesting. I've got friends that kind of have grown up the wrong side of the law that never believed in God or any type of God, nothing. And then would either, something would happen in their life, a pinnacle moment where some of them maybe went to jail, some of them went somewhere else, and they've come back with faith, with some form of faith. And I always say, I don't like labeling it. I don't like saying I'm this or that religion or there's this God or that God, because I feel like it divides.
Yeah.
I do believe there's a higher power bigger than all of us, a bigger energy somewhere, something. And I always think, like, if you need faith to be a better human being and do better, I respect that. Mm. Do you know what I mean? If you need faith. The God thing, I'm always curious at what point in people's lives they kind of get on that journey.
Mm. I mean, I got closer when I remember, like, going to Miami, going to Miami for training and stuff. And I think that was a very pivotal moment in my life and in my career. Obviously, he was struggling to get fights. He was going to sign in America. That fell through. And I was literally throughout my birthday and Christmas and that, I was sleeping in like an attic, bruv. Like, it's mad. I could even show you the picture, bruv. Like, I was sleeping in the attic and it was just like, I was just thinking, like, where is my career going to go? I was praying every day, sometimes crying. I was like, you know, because I'm working so much harder than the people that have fights and all of this. And I was thinking, where is this going for me? Like, probably ran out of money in Miami as well, sleeping in some attic in one of my coach's houses a bit. And it was just like, damn, what's going to happen here? Do you know what I mean? I don't know what's going to happen with me here. You know, but there's one thing that was always there. I never once thought, you know what, I'm going to give it up. I didn't know how I was going to make it through, but, you know, I just prayed and prayed. And, you know, he came to the rescue when he saw me just in Miami training by myself, a diamond in the rough. And one person I'll always have respect for is Mick Hennessy.
Really?
Yeah.
Sick.
You know, he was like, I think I reached out because I wanted to fight on Craig Richards and Shaq and Peters.
Yeah.
Craig Richards and Shaq and Peters were going to fight in 2020. Was it 2020, I think? I don't know, something like that. And obviously, this was like just before COVID really hit. And he said we used to speak on the phone for hours, and obviously I would tell him my story and everything. And he was like, you know what, I'm going to take a chance on you. You know, you can be something. I'm going to take a chance. I see you working, and I used to send him videos and stuff. And obviously we built a very, very solid friendship, you know. And it was just like, you know, he gave me that little bit of hope.
Yeah.
And at that moment, it was probably my point. I started to point to, like, what am I gonna really do now? Like, everything's falling through. And then we start speaking, you know. So obviously it's like, wow, you know what, this is, you know. And then I start having a spark of faith now. Like, hold on, I can do something. These times I haven't fought since 2018. It's probably 2019, 2020, getting into 2020. And I remember I was training in Miami. Throughout Christmas, New Year's, I was spending it by myself, and I would see everybody, you know, celebrating Christmas with their families, and I'm just here by myself eating some bullshit food, bland ass food. And obviously sometimes it'll bring me to tears, like, what the hell am I doing out here by myself? Like, do you know what I mean? And I just knew somehow it's gonna pay off. You just gonna keep having faith, it's gonna pay off, it's gonna pay off, it's gonna pay off. And after that,
What kept you going, bro?
God, bro. That's what kept me going, bro.
Really?
God kept me going. I just kept praying. And I was, like, I used to, you know, like, it's hard because you don't have anyone to share anything with or speak. So I used to write a lot, you know. Okay. That's how I got speaking with Don McRae, because I used to write a whole lot and, you know, write things and all of that. And yeah, it was,
what, like journal almost?
Yeah, yeah. Do you want me to read one?
You kept them all. What do you mean, right? Like, just your thoughts on that?
Yeah, bro. Hold on. Do you want me to read one?
Yeah, go on, read one, bro.
Hold on.
I've got a notes page. It's called Ramblings. And it's like every Ramblings. Year. Yeah, I just ramble. Like, you know, like shit that comes on my head.
Yeah.
Good,
yeah,
bad, yeah, the ugly. Yeah. I just write it down.
Wow.
Helps get off your chest, mate.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it helped a lot.
Mm.
You know,
you were physically on your own in Miami, but even if you're not on your own here, like you've got people around you, sometimes you feel like you're lonely, right?
Mm.
Being lonely has got nothing to do with being alone or not. Do you know what I mean?
It helped me to really express what I couldn't say. You know, you don't want to keep things bottled up. If you keep things bottled, you're going to fry your head, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's amazing you could like figure that out at that young age, though.
I know, I'm surprised
myself. That's quite young. That's quite young to be that aware. I think of myself, I'm 35. I've probably only in the last 5 years discovered all that kind of stuff. You're talking about being 23 years old.
Yeah.
24 years old in Miami.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But most people would be out chasing skirt.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I just used to think, like, chasing, what's that going to fulfill for me? Do you know what I mean? It's not, what's it going to do for me? Like, chasing girls.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay, I found it. Are you ready? It says deep, you know. I've only shared this with Don McRae. I think that's it.
Go for it, bro. You ain't going to find deeper than me. Promise you. Right.
Square One, 24th of December, 2019. Life is like a game. Man is like snakes and ladders, the way it goes up and up and one mistake has you sliding down. Isn't it ironic how the snakes pull you down? It's funny because the snakes tried to rob me without even signing me. In fact, my life was like Monopoly. Because however hard I work, I always seem to end up in the same place where I started, with the same setbacks and the same problems. This is weird. I don't know what I'm feeling, but I must continue. I will continue. It doesn't faze me anymore. I kept it under wraps for a while, but Mick Hennessy and Channel 5 are going to sign me in a few days, and I was going to make a surprise comeback appearance on the Joe Joyce versus Marco Huck undercard in an 8-rounder against 50 wins, 10 losses veteran René Huebner at the TUI Arena in front of 14,000 passionate Germans. My blood was boiling with the thrill of entertaining the masses like the gladiator I am, knocking out their beloved national hero on Channel 5, cementing this 2020 comeback legacy story that they all call my career. But of course, dreams often get shattered as Marco Huck has to pull out with a hand fracture from sparring on the weekend. I felt numb when I heard the news. Not with any pain, but with an acceptance that this must be just how life goes. This must be what it is for me. No break, nor is there no breakthrough. I pick up my hopes off the ground and I tell myself that I must keep going. I must be relentless. I must not stop. I left my mother, families, little brothers and sisters for hope. A hope that nothing could actually happen. This kills me slowly, but it's turning me so much more dangerous. No one is around me for any sort of comfort. Not that I'm looking for it, but it's a big burden when you have such a mind full of depth. It's a blessing and a curse. A day later, it's Christmas Day. I wake up to missed calls from family at 6:15 a.m. because they still think I'm in the UK. I wish I was amongst them. I wish I saw my friends and family. I wish I could spend time with them. But I'm here, all alone, packing my boots and cooking eggs with toast and making Cuban coffee, a Miami delicacy and a traditional Latin fighter's breakfast before sparring. I wanted to take out my frustration on this undefeated Russian heavyweight that I sparred last Saturday and put a beating on. I knew he was going to come back with a vengeance, so I slept early and drank a lot of water to keep hydrated. As I waited for my Uber to arrive, I scrolled through countless Instagram pictures of families together with their loved ones and so much mouth-watering Christmas food. I was happy for them, but I knew my time will come when one day I'll have my family that I'll love to dress up in Christmas gear and pose in front of a highly decorated tree filled with lights and sparkles, different assortments of presents waiting to be unraveled. Smiles are everywhere and hearts are warm. I kind of lived through their photos as if I was there, laughing, joking, slowly smiling at this phone screen. Then my phone died. It turned into a black mirror with my reflection staring back at me, glaring. I saw the pain in my eyes, the pain that I really tried to hide. I thought it was a pain at first, but it's actually acceptance. An acceptance that I will never stop no matter what life throws at me. because I don't know how to. I don't know how to not work hard or to be lazy or to not chase my dreams with 100% relentlessness. Arrive at the gym, the sparring partner cancelled. He said his rib was still hurting from last Saturday. I'm not even mad. I've come to terms with being let down that I just brush it aside and keep my mind in the ball on what I have to do next. And that's transcended into my personal life. When something amazing happens, that's when I'm surprised. But the setbacks are a part of life. We must learn to deal with it. I ended up having one of the best training sessions I've had today, full of explosion punches, dexterity and full flow, because I was prepared to go 12 rounds today. My mind was conditioned to work tirelessly today and my body kept up. After 2 hours of solid gym work, I get a call from Mick Hennessy from Channel 5. He's asking me if I would like to headline Channel 5 on February the 22nd for my comeback fight in the UK at Your Call. He knows the impact I have with the sales and I'll sell the place out in minutes. I said, let's talk in a couple of days so I can come up with some numbers and opponents so I can talk with my advisor. This wasn't the 2019 that I wanted, but it was character building. I'm in the ground now, buried, 5,000 miles from home, sitting in my room on Christmas Day. But I will rise. I will rise above everyone. That's my motivation every day. I will rise and I'll take over. 2020 will be mine. And I'm going to win because I deserve it. I can only go up. Nowadays, I'm in a state of mind that prevents normal perception. I literally don't see the world the way everyone else sees it. I have to accomplish great things, even if I'm not in a position to do it. The ability to show up every day in the gym and do what no one else will do. The drive to get to the top and stay there year after year. Deep inside, there's an undeniable force driving my actions. I must embrace it. I feel like I finally understand why I had to go through such a year.
Fuck. Bro, that's heavy.
Crazy, isn't it? I know, bro. I know, man. It's deep, bro. That shit was from the heart, bro. From the heart.
Does it make you emotional rereading it?
A little bit. You saw a little bit of
my face.
A little bit, man. I tried to hide it.
I heard it in your voice.
Yeah, fucking hell, man. But yeah, went through a lot in that journey when I was in Miami.
It's like a prayer, bro. It's like a prayer that.
It's a lot, isn't it? It's pretty deep. When I showed Don McRae, he was like, mate, you got to keep writing.
You have got to keep writing. Have you ever thought about rapping, bro?
Rapping?
Yeah.
I'm not good at no rapping, bro.
Fuck, are you joking?
Yeah, but that's like, rapping is different. It's like, yeah, you got...
but you could do spoken word, mate. Because you know what? The lyrics are so deep. They connect with most people, those lyrics. Because even when you were talking that, there's sections in that I can relate to, periods of my life. Maybe different scenario, different setting, but the fundamental message is the same.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's heavy, bro.
I know.
You still write?
Sometimes. Not as much, but I think I will get back to doing it more, you know. I do still write, actually, but not obviously as much as I did before.
That still hurts you, innit?
I wouldn't say it hurts me, but it probably molded me a bit more into who I am today, you know, and I just have to thank God for that. Because obviously, so I think certain times as a man as well, you got to go through certain things alone. Mm. You got to really get to where you want to be. Ooh. Like, because we're normal people, like, it's not like just like a 9-to-5 every day. Like, we're performers, fighting gladiators that we have to perform in front of everyone. And when you lose in front of everyone. So it's kind of, it's a bit deep, different. It cuts a bit more deep.
Heavy,
everything is a bit more different. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Getting punched in the face is not easy, bro.
You know? Or, do you know what the funny thing is? Getting punched probably isn't easy, but I'd imagine punching also isn't very easy.
Mm.
You're hurting someone.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean?
You've got to think about it. Like,
you're God's child, bro. Like, how does that religion go hand in hand with boxing? Boxing is fighting, is hurting, is violent, is, and then with one breath you're praying and like peace and love and forgiveness, and the other breath you're trying to cave someone's head in.
I would say it's not like I'm bullying someone, it's a choice. They're choosing to get in and we're literally fighting for our families basically to earn some money, you know. Mm-hmm. I would call it that way. You know, in the Bible they'll pray before they go to war. You know, it was much more vicious back then.
Very, very vicious.
Very vicious.
Yeah.
So that's how I would look at it, you know. And I definitely believe that God took me to boxing, you know.
That would you say that was your darkest point there?
darker.
You said something about after the Okolie fight with your uncle and that, running off with money and shit. That must have hurt.
Yeah, of course. He was my trainer. He was like the person I had confidence in. Do you know what I mean? If somebody can look into your eyes and tell you never done nothing, how could you trust them with your life in that ring? It's crazy. Do you know what I mean?
That relationship over now?
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, I don't have no, like, way of like, I hate you or anything. No, that's all gone. Do you know what I mean? I wish him the best and I wish him well.
None of that energy. Yeah, yeah. It's more like you do you.
Yeah, basically.
Are you quite a forgetful person anyway?
I would say that, but I wouldn't be in a predicament where I have to go through something to figure someone. Do you get it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I wouldn't like, you know, I wouldn't let everyone in like that, so I can, so they can, you know, break my trust and stuff and I have to forgive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hi, guys. While I've got you, I wanted to announce an exciting new sponsor for the show. For those that know me or listen regularly, you'll know that I'm a big combat sports fan, and some of my favorite kit to use when training is by a brand called Venom. Fellow combat sports fans will know Venom as the UFC's official outfitting apparel partner. They have clothing and equipment for MMA, boxing, Muay Thai, and BJJ. However, what I'm most excited about is their new lifestyle range, some of which I'll be rocking on the show. It's a privilege to partner with a global brand such as Venom. Will it make me a better athlete? Probably not, but at least I'll look good doing it.
Bro, since that first fight, you've gone to win like several titles, you know, a British Commonwealth Cruiserweight Champions. Like, did you have those ambitions when you started? Were you like, did you always know you were going to win titles? I'm just going with the flow.
I knew I was going to win something. I was going to win something. Like, I don't know. It's just my boxing career, amateur and professional, has been very different to normal people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had 9 amateur fights. I should have had like 60, 70.
Why only 9?
Obviously, I don't know, trying to get fights, it was very difficult, or maybe did they even bother to try and get me fights? Like, I don't know. Like, I put in all the work. I'd put in just as much work as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But something was, I don't know, bro. They just didn't. Even when I turned professional and, you know, I should have got personally, obviously, if I didn't have the layoffs and stuff, I probably would have been a lot further. I would have had probably more fights, you know, 30 fights now or 25 or whatever, you know. But I never had a normal amateur career, never had a normal professional career. But in a weird way, because it was very different, it obviously had a lot of benefits. I was always on TV, you know. I started to get paid a lot of money, you know. I've got a lot of good sponsors, you know, that pay me a lot of money as well. So, you know, it's a blessing. It's a very different type of blessing, you know what I mean?
Because
I didn't go the original way.
Yeah, you're living well now.
Yeah.
You're looking after mumsy now.
Yeah, looking after my mum. Yeah, it does, you know, because it took a while. Well, you know, it's like, people don't really understand the road that it takes, especially when you've grown up and you're the only one that's being successful, making a lot of money, and that they don't, like, they can only take you so far. Mm-hmm. Some of the people around you and family and that. And it's like, then you have to start getting advice and stuff from people that's been there and that's done even more than you. Do you know what I mean? So it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, and you realise, like, you don't even mean it, but you start to separate yourself a bit. Do you know what I mean? It's weird. Like, you don't want to be around the same people because it's like, it kind of drags you down a bit. I don't know if I'm saying it right.
No, you are. It makes complete sense to me. I was thinking about something in my own life then when you're saying that.
Yeah, because it's like you got to level up at all times, but some people, they're not mentally ready to deal or to know that you're moving up, and sometimes they just can't do it. Not of any fault of their own, but it's just that sometimes they can't go with what you're going through. Sometimes I would think I'm an intense person because I'm disciplined to hell. Like, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to be on point. Da, 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 da. Like, even on the way here, yeah, the traffic was crazy. Do you know what? The traffic was crazy, but I didn't even tell you. I went to go into my car. I left my keys in the house. So luckily, I go to a coffee shop that I always go to. I had to run there, get my keys, because obviously I left keys there, spare key, go back here, get in the car, and drive off fast. But I'm always a person, I like to be on time. I want to be like 5 minutes early, and it was bugging me that I had to even send that text. Like, I'm thinking, shit, man.
No, you know?
Like, but I'm the type of person, I'm like that. Do you know what I mean? So, I don't know, man. It's crazy, man.
What you got your sights on now? World title? What's like the dream?
The dream? Oh, yeah, 100%
for world the boxing title. World title,
yeah. World title. You know, that green and gold WBC, that's always been a favourite of mine. You know, any of the world titles, but one of them, you know, and that'll really be like, what a story, bro, from where I was to now. Do you know what I mean? Nobody expected me to do nothing. When I was an amateur, I didn't have expected. I remember when I went to Frank Bruno Boxing Academy. And I remember, yeah, they were like, I think that we was doing some sort of essay thing, and it was like, oh, out of everyone, who do you think's gonna be? And I remember one guy, I'm not gonna say his name. See, he spoke and he was like, oh, I don't think Isaac's gonna sell tickets, so I don't think Isaac's gonna do anything in boxing. And obviously I was thinking, oh, why would you say that? But these times I'm 15, 16, so, and obviously everyone else is in GB squad or England squad, they're doing all these things. And look at little old me with a peanut head, like, I'm just trying to do something. Like, I just wanna get good and be a good boxer, like. Do you know what I mean? It's just me. Like, everyone there got all these badges on their shorts, national champion, England, blessed, this. Yeah. It's just me. Like, what the fuck is Isaac doing here, bro? Do you know what I mean? So,
I respect that hustle, though, mate.
Yeah, I tried. That all you can do in this life is try, man. You know.
Bro, you've got a 16-2 record, yeah? With some huge wins. But talk to me about them two losses. There's one to Akoli and one to CBS. What's your relationship with failure? How do you take those losses?
You know, I took the Akoli one a lot harder than I took the CBS one.
You know? Why is that? Because there's a British beef kind of.
No, just because of everything that happened after. You know, my uncle and it was kind of in a shock, like, because of the lead up to it. There was no planning. There was no planned nutrition. There was no planned. Anything, like, everything was like, I remember the week of the fight, I'm vomiting because I don't know, weight loss or something. Like, I was skinny, I was just, I don't know what it was. It might have been stress or pressure of the fight, I don't know. But I was skinny, we was overtrained, I was running like the week of the fight. Like, my trainer was like, you gotta do this. I was running 8 miles, sparring 12 rounds 5 days a week. Like, I was running into the ground. Like, it was ridiculous. I remember doing the media workout and I was just dead. Obviously, everyone around, you got to say, I'm good. And I remember the day of the fight, or I think it was after the weigh-in and stuff, you know, training was like, oh, yeah, go to ZZ's to get a pasta or something. And I'm thinking, bro, this, in my back of my head, I'm thinking, this is not professional. This is not the way it should be. I bet Lawrence has all these people that are like, eat this at this time, da-da-da-da-da. And then all the camps that I've been in, you know, sparring Usyk and AJ and Mike Perez and Mastanak, all these people, I've seen their camps. They don't act like this. I want my own place. I want, you know, a team that acts like this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was just weird. You know, I didn't enjoy the process of that, you know, but I just kept lying to myself that I felt good. Yeah, it's all good. And obviously what happened. I didn't really have the energy to fight. Obviously, it went the full 10 rounds and that, but I never had the energy to, like, explode. I never had none of that. It was all left from training.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt like I never had a choice. I never had a choice, you know, of saying, no, I'm tired or whatever. And that's why now I'm like, if I feel tired or whatever happens, no, I'm the man of my own ship. You know, before, I was kind of leaving it to my uncle and trainers and that, but hold on, you're the one who pays them. But I was too young to think like that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was too young to think that. So, but obviously, if it happened, no, that'll never happen. I have a great team, you know, Bobby Mills and Connor Ward, you know, my SSC coach, Rory and Ade, and, you know, my nutritionist, Lee Rickards from Boxing Set. Like, they're on point people. Like, and I'm glad because I hired a specific team. I could have went with, you know, these stables of other fighters and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I thought, nah, let me build my own that will really focus on me, because I don't want that shit to happen again, man. Do you know what I mean? Because after a while, they're all going to blame you anyway. If you didn't like it, why did you go with it?
Yeah, and that's
how I think sometimes. So then it's just like, do you know what? I got to man my own ship because I'm the only one. All these other people that are working for me, basically, they're going to have another fighter and another fighter and another fighter and another fighter. But your career, after your career is done, it's done. So you really got to make sure you handle your shit, bro. Or this shit's going to happen again. And that's what I really had to do.
Hmm.
You know?
And then you said, like, the CBS one, you didn't take as hard as Okoli. The loss.
No, because I knew in my heart, like, obviously, oh, it's a funny one, man. It's like, obviously, a loss is never easy to take. But with the CBS one, I knew that obviously the odds were in my favor. Bournemouth, you know, his crowd. And obviously, I didn't fight since December. And then the fight was in July. Obviously, that's a long while. And my first 12 rounder, he's been having back to back mm-hmm. rounders, obviously, with McCarthy twice and the other guy, Bergeron, and the other. So he's been active. So he's been battle tested and ready. And, but I went in there, yeah. Obviously, there was obviously a game plan, supposed to box him and that. But obviously, when I was walking out, I'm hearing, "Be you black monkey, this, that, da, 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 da."
You're joking.
I swear. Bournemouth is ruthless. Bournemouth fans are ruthless. Right. So I'm hearing.
I was there
in
that fight.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. But after party was at my nightclub, the church.
Oh, wow. You got a nightclub?
That's me.
Yeah. You know, that's a good nightclub, Barso.
Yeah, that's banging. Well, downstairs.
Nah, of course, that's your enemies, isn't
it? Nah. They got like five rooms, loads of different genres of music. But okay. Yeah, downstairs in Barso is sick.
Yeah, it's cold.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously they're saying all of these things, and obviously that kind of changed my mentality a bit. In my head, I thought, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go in and I'm going to smoke your boy and everyone's going to be quiet. That's right. From the first round, ding, 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 boom, walloping each other. And,
Yeah, it was a heavy start.
It was heavy. And obviously, I'm always a person, even before that, I had like five knockouts on the trot, like first round knockouts, third round knockouts, whatever. And this motherfucker was still there. Hey, Chris is a tough motherfucker.
He's like a Terminator, really.
Yeah, he just keeps going. And I thought, but there was never a time that I thought, even when my eye went or whatever, there was never a time that I thought, oh, you know what, this is hard or whatever. Because of obviously what I read out and everything that I've been through, there was not even an inch in me that thought, oh, no, this is hard. I thought, I'm going to get him. What? Fuck the eye. What? It's nothing. What? I'm going to get him. That's how my mentality was.
Yeah.
And obviously, John Pegg and Wobby, they were talking to me after and I said, this guy's a fucking psycho, bro. You see? I said, bro, because they were like, oh, how's it feeling? Yeah, whatever, man. What do I need to do? Oh, you need to, okay. Oh, yeah. But it's so funny because it's such a blur now because I can't really, do you know what I mean? But my mentality.
It's quite a serious injury, that eye as well.
Yeah, but I said, fuck it. I said, fuck it, bro. If we die, we die, bro.
That's
I said, yeah, this is what you're in it for. Like, I wouldn't say you're in it for wars like that, but if you want the belts, the fame and the money and all of these great things, whatever, you have to deal with the consequences that come with it, you know?
Mm.
And that another thing when I was in Miami, I used to listen to a lot of Inky Johnson, and he said this quote, and this quote always sticks with me. Can you be committed to the process without being emotionally attached to the results? So if you don't get what you want, can you still be that same hard worker, that same dog, that same you're all about it? Can you still be that same guy? Like,
I love that.
You know what I mean? Like, remember, like in that the notes that I read out, found out the fight's not happening, I still went to the gym. Sparring partner wasn't there, I still went to the gym, put in the work. Like, I'm just all with it. Do you know what I mean? You had to be.
Of course.
And, you know, that was my mentality. And, you know, unfortunately for me, in that fight, I fought one of the most toughest boxers in the world. You know what I mean? One of the most toughest, but anyone else would have folded.
Yeah.
You know, the way the high the pace was, the punches that were thrown, all of that, you know.
I always find with Chris when we're watching him, we're close friends, and obviously Bournemouth's quite a small knit place anyway.
Yeah.
But I always find when I'm watching him, he's got this kind of,
he probably doesn't feel like it, and he feels comfortable in there. But from the outside, when you're watching, and when you're not a boxer, you know, mm-hmm. you're an armchair fan, you do a bit of boxing training, he's got this Rocky vibe where he goes to war for the first 3, 4, 5 rounds, and you think he's hit gone. A lot, and you think, oh my God, he's gone.
Yeah,
oh my
God, comes
his knees are gone, or his shoulders are gone.
I think it's his fans, though. His fans stir him on.
And then suddenly, he just carries on and on yeah. and on. It reminds me of like the old Rocky films.
Because you're
thinking, fuck, what are you doing? Like, put your guard up, or don't take that shot. But when you speak to him after, he goes, no, I was really comfortable in there. Like, I didn't feel it. But from the outside, as an armchair fan that maybe doesn't understand the game plan or what he's trying to achieve,
you're like, and even fuck. The ref for that fight. Yeah, he's a cool guy now. We speak, the ref for that fight was like, I remember this in the change room. Like, he obviously said no holding, da 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 da.
Yeah.
I think in the first one or two, and obviously Lennon clinched. And then I told him, I was speaking to him, I said, ref, you said no holding. And he said, just fucking box, Isaac. I said, as soon as he said that, I said, we're in for a long night. You know?
I love
and
that.
Even in the last 30 seconds of the fight, you know, we're going back and forth. When then I catch him, boom. I didn't even realize I caught him. I was just one eye shut and I'm just
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he wobbles, he falls down. He's just like this, probably exhaustion or he got buzzed or whatever. And then I tried to jump on him. But even, I remember I saw the ref and the ref was like, listen, I was going to jump in and stop the fight, you know. And then, you know, I said, why the hell would you tell me that? Now I feel even worse.
Yeah.
No, because he was like that. He was going to jump in. Imagine if he stopped the fight. Oh, my days, I would be a national hero.
Yeah, mate, that's mad.
Bro, that would be crazy.
That's mad. But,
you know,
I apologise on behalf of Bournemouth if they treated you like that. No, I didn't hear all that
shit. They love
shit.
Me now, though.
Yeah, of course.
They fucking love me now.
They're generally it's quite a good crowd in that sense. They don't really get like that, generally speaking. But yeah, I don't like that vibe of stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. My friend got kicked out because there was people that were being racist while we were fighting, and he was getting mad at them. And
what, in the crowd?
Yeah, and the security had to escort him out. Yeah, I think it's because everyone's drunk, football hooligans, all of that, you know.
Of course,
I mean?
Yeah, he's got a big football following and football's always a little bit. But yeah, I mean, football always gets a bad rap, so no excuse. Humans are humans, aren't they? They shouldn't fucking act like that. They shouldn't say things like that. As you said earlier, you don't have to make it personal or have an emotional attachment to the sport.
Mm.
You can still support who you want to support. Regardless of all that other shit.
Even you see that fight, obviously, that's why I didn't really take that loss as bad, because everyone was just like, listen, bro, that's a crazy fight if you're going to lose.
It was an amazing fight. And this is the thing, right? There's fights that you, as a fan as well, I'm saying, there's fights that you would see your guy losing, but you have more respect for them than the guy that won.
Mm.
We've seen this loads in boxing, haven't we? You can lose and still be the people's champ.
Yeah.
Or you can lose and still put an outstanding performance on.
Yeah. But my mindset was like, all right, you know, obviously that was a crazy fight and lost, but I still lost, so. And obviously when the shit dies down and everyone's
still
on to the
L.
next fight, it's still an L. Like, and obviously that was kind of getting to me a little bit, thinking, shit, like, I need to get better. I need to improve. And what needs to be done next? And, you know, what happened? Like, do you know what I mean? Obviously, I got dragged in.
How do you turn your mindset around ready for the next fight? So you have a loss. Let's say the Okoli won. It's a heavy loss for you anyway. Then you've got all that shit you've dealt with. And then you're in that space, in that mindset. How are you turning that around then to prepare for the next fight? How are you trying to find the positive in that? Do you know what I mean? Where do you go for in your head, or is it all God, prayer?
But at that moment, you better fucking get on it, boy. Like, there's no time to, I feel bad. You better fucking get on that road and keep on it. Like, you just have to. This is what you do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because obviously the things that I went through in Miami and stuff, I never want to be in a position where, like, I'm taking what I'm doing for granted. That's another big thing that I learned. Like, you know, taking it for granted. Like, oh, I'm not waking up to run, or I'm not training, or I'm just going to take it easy. Nah, because I know what it's like to not fight. And that shit was killing me, bro, because I saw people that were below me in the rankings come up and go past me and shit. And that shit hurt.
Gratitude,
yeah. Yeah, you know, and like, at least I get to do what I do and I'm alive. Like,
yeah.
I'm healthy, I can do it. And that's what was stirring me on, you know.
It's a blessing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's important sometimes to count the basic stuff.
Because everyone looks past it, doesn't they? You've got two legs, two arms, you can walk, you can talk.
There's a lot of people that can't do that.
Of course, like, the basic things.
Even like in terms of, there's a lot of people that's even struggling with work, struggling with money, and we're blessed to be.
To eat.
Yeah, like, so that's why I'm very fortunate, you know, and I'm very grateful for everything, every blessing, because I know what it's like to not have it. I know what it's like to not fucking, I can't even come into school, like on school, on close day, I didn't come into school. I ain't have shit, bro. What fucking bullshit, clothes, bullshit, fucking trousers, bullshit, fucking trainers. I didn't have none of that. So I'd rather just not come in, yeah. But obviously I wouldn't stay at my house. I'll stay, like, I'll go to the park or something with my friends or whatever. Because if I go into school, they're going to take the piss out of me. I'm going to have to punch someone up, fam. Do you know what I mean? Like, because we didn't have a pound for Mufti Day. And that's just, but so I know what it's like, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful to be in this position. You know, very grateful. It's not a lot. I'm not a fucking millionaire, but, you know.
You're comfy, I mean? Bro. You eat and you got a roof over your head.
Yeah, definitely.
I always think like that. What, you said you've sparred before with, like, AJ, right? Usyk, Deontay Wilder, all these people. Who was the hardest? Who'd you rate the most? When you're sparring against him?
I mean, Joshua was fucking durable. He's like he's punching the wall. Like, do you know what I mean? His abs are like, boom. We're fucking mental. Bro. You know.
How'd you find Usyk?
Usyk is a wizard, bro. He's very good, though. He's very good. I remember sparring him because I went there for two camps because they loved me that much.
Yeah.
And after the sparring, I'll always come up to him and say, oh, what do I need to work on? This was when he was preparing for the WSB. He was going to fight Marco Hawk.
Okay, yeah.
So obviously I would ask him, like, oh, what do I need to work on? He goes, yeah, you need to do this. So we would talk a lot. Like, we'll chop up, proper talking. The next time I spar, I'm kind of getting a bit better of him a little bit. Like, and then I'll ask him after, oh, what do I need to work on? Nothing good. And he just walk off. I said, you fucker, bro. Like, I knew, okay, this guy, you know what I mean?
How'd you see him in Fury going?
Oh, it's fucking
hell. You had to make a call on it. If you had to make a call, who you got winning that?
I don't know. Cause the only person I haven't sparred is Fury, you know. It's hard to say, bro. You know, Fury does what Fury does, but because Fury is so fucking big.
Yeah.
It's hard to go against him. Like,
well, you know. I've got 2 meter arm length, and he's fucking shit. Well, not literally, but he's a big lad. Yeah,
big guy, and he could probably smother him and try to whatever, and he's quick as well. Quick hands, quick feet for a big guy.
There's a genuine difference in size there, isn't there? Like, one's a natural cruiserweight.
Yeah.
So there's a genuine difference in size. It's not like...
Yeah, but Usyk is very, very good, man. Very good, very good. Like, I took out a lot of things because I would ask his coach as well. I was like a guy that I would like... Every sparring place I went for sparring, I'm doing the extra work. I'm asking him, what do I need to do? Oh, what about this? Oh, what about this? Oh, how do you do this? Or there's this thing that you do. And then I know their trainers are thinking, oh, this guy, he's watching a bit too much, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this guy, they're thinking, this guy's going to be good because he's fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man,
it's crazy.
Bro, talking about like sponsorship and that, you're like the face of British boxing now for Venom, innit?
Basically.
You're on the front of their website and shit.
Yeah. Shout out to Venom, man. They're
mad.
Great people.
How does that feel for you?
Yeah, it feels good, man. It's a blessing, man. You know, such a big brand, you know, they will partner with the UFC and that as well.
Huge global brand, yeah.
So,
I know they're still trying to make their way in the UK as such a bit, but in Europe and in the States, massive.
Yeah. They need to use my face more to get bigger. Need to use my face more.
I like
it,
bro.
Man, they're smashing it, man.
What's your thoughts, bro, on this whole like influencer boxing thing? These YouTuber boxers, this whole thing. Is it something you would look into when your career's over, or even now if the money was right?
Honestly, I think it's a good thing, you know, because it's bringing eyes to the sport. People that don't watch boxing are going to start tuning in. Oh, you know what? I see this influencer stuff. Let me try and watch some real boxing. Let's see what it's like. Mm. Oh, I see it. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's good. Personally, I think it's a good thing, you know. It brings more eyes on the sport. Most people don't really like it, but...
It's a good way of looking at it, yeah.
Some
of the purists are quite funny with it because they feel like it's kind of taking the piss out of the sport a bit.
Yeah. But I think it's a good thing, man.
Ultimately as well, like we said about earlier, like you boys are going in and fighting for your families, for your income, for future. Do you know what I mean? So at what stage do you sort of think, right, there's a fight there I could take, which is the purest path, and it's going to get me 100 grand, or there's a fight there I could take against a guy that really isn't a boxer, but I'm going to earn 2 million quid, and my family's sorted for life, my kids are sorted for life.
Mm.
It's a tough decision to make.
Mate, you can't go into a car dealership, yeah, and buy a car with your belts. Can't lie. You know,
I hear you.
It. Yeah. So,
with your medals and shit.
Yeah, you can't do that, bro. It's, you know, even like, I swear, you know, Amir Khan's opponent, Mario Kindlin,
yeah.
He was selling his gold medal for $5,000 or something. And Amir Khan donated the money and he said, keep the medal. But you see what I mean? Like, it's crazy, bro. So, but it depends what you want to do, man. But
you know, will you take a fight if you got offered one with any of them YouTubers and that?
I don't know. I have to think about
at
it.
At this
man.
Stage in your career, do you
at
see what
this
I mean?
Stage,
this is the tough part. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. Obviously, you need to make money, but it depends on the difference. 100 yeah, yeah. grand to 2 million, you're taking a piss, bro.
Yeah.
Taking a piss, bro.
You're like, I'll go down for 2 million. Don't tell me what round.
No, not if I go down. That's a different story, bro.
Oh, mate. Well, what's next for you, bro?
There's obviously three options. There's Szczesny for the European, mandatory for the European.
Mm-hmm.
There's Chef Clark. And fought with Matchroom and Eddie Hearn, and there's Vidal Riley. So, you know, we're just sorting it out, to be honest, as we speak.
But one of them this year?
Oh, yeah, bro, like literally April, 27th of April.
That's so, sick.
Sick of it.
Who do you want in order? Who would you rather, first, second, third, if you could pick? Forget like the money or what television rights or in terms of the fighters to fight out of those three.
I'll pick Szczesny first, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Szczesny, then...
Why?
Because he's the man, like that's that level, innit? Like, he's fringe world level, basically. You know, he's fought for the world
title
twice.
You're not shying away from the toughest one, are you, really?
No, of course not.
You're rather
tough. That's what you want, you're here for, like, do you know what I mean? So, Szczesny, then... It's tied between Vidal and Chef, you know. Very good, like, they bring their own little thing in their own way. They're both good, you know.
Also, like, out of them three, who's going to want to risk fighting you as well, right? For their career and where they're heading.
No, they would want to, both of them want to fight more because obviously I have all the domestic belts.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So they're going to...
There's so much politics in it, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's kind of annoying sometimes when you know certain people should be fighting someone and they don't in their prime, they do after. You know, we saw it with Pacquiao and Mayweather, didn't we? Like a decade too late.
Trust me.
You know what I mean? Like all these kind of Fury AJ. Like I remember I do evening withs, like evening with shows. And I've done Fury twice. I've done Anthony Joshua. I've done Floyd Mayweather down in where we live in Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. I brought them down to do a show. And I remember that first time I brought AJ down, that's when the hype was around him and Fury.
Mm.
And I'm talking like 2019, maybe.
Mm.
We're now in 2024. Yeah. Fight still not happened.
Still not.
You'd argue it's almost out the other end now. Do you know what I mean?
It kind of is, you know.
It's off the boil a bit.
Yeah. But it would have been way better if when AJ had all the belts. It would have been mental.
Yeah, man. Well, I hope you get your fight, bro, in April. And obviously we'll be there.
I think I will. I think it should be all right, you know. Still, Mick is a great guy, man. He's sorting everything out. Do you know what I mean? He's sorting everything out.
I see the respect you got for him. I can tell by the way.
Yeah, man, he's a serious bro. He's a good guy, man, and he's one of the good guys in boxing,
which is rare, right?
Yeah, so rare. Because happened to me, bro. You know, now you don't get many people that will fight your corner for you like that.
Mm.
You know, that's why I've the most respect for him. I'm gonna probably spend my whole career with him, you know.
Yeah. If there was one thing you could change in the boxing industry, bro, what would it be? That?
Nah, you got a chance. It is what it is. So there's no point just trying to change it. Like, it is what it is, bro. But what would I change?
Not necessarily for you, in general, in the industry. Mm. If something needs to change for it to be better, what would it be?
I would say to change, like, to bridge the gap from the small hall shows to the TV. Yeah, you know, how, like, because not everyone gets that chance because they can't sell tickets, which I don't think is really fair, you know? Like,
it's quite interesting that in boxing, isn't it? Like, if you, even in white collar, I used to put on white collar shows quite a lot down in Bournemouth at the O2 for a year, some charity ones and some white collar stuff. We'd always pick people that sold tickets and tables. Mm. Over the people that would box well.
Yeah, so imagine professional boxing. There's probably some guy from Peru or something, don't really speak English, can't sell tickets, but he's a badass fighter.
Yeah.
He will never get the opportunity. You know, he'll never get the opportunity, which I think like that's pretty sad, man.
You think there should almost be like a rite of passage, isn't there?
I don't know how you would do it.
Yeah. I don't know. Or if you think with UFC, that the normal rite of passage is Cage Warriors, right? Everyone goes to Cage Warriors first, and then they make their way to the UFC. Like if you win Cage Warriors, then the geezer manages you, and puts you through. It's not necessarily the only way now, but it was the only way through. Like to get onto the UFC, you went through Cage Warriors.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor went through Cage Warriors. They went through Cage Warriors. It was like the one below.
Yeah. I don't know. Boxing doesn't really have that. There's too much stuff going on in boxing, man.
Yeah. Mad. Bro, appreciate your time. Thank you, mate.